Game On on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to Jenny Green for getting us to the end of the week. It's Friday the 15th of October and this is Game On. Coming up today, after an eventful international break, it's back to the club scene with Steve Bruce more than ready for his 1,000th game as manager.
Well, I hope yous are feeling the heat from your bosses, because it hasn't happened, has it? Of what you all wanted. So let's hope you're getting a bit of stick from the people who put you in charge of whatever department you do. As I've said many, many times, when you're going to manage in the Premier League, you have to take what's coming your way and have to have the ability to see the job through.
He always comes out fighting. Alan Cawley and Fergal Brennan will talk us through an interesting day of press conferences in the Premier League. It's also a busy night in the League of Ireland. We'll bring you up to speed. Meanwhile, in Gaelic football, we now have financial figures to go with each championship proposal. And speaking of money, Shane Mangan is with us to preview the Murphy versus Buick finale and all the action as Britain's richest race day.
Get ready to experience the extraordinary, to witness history in the making. The 10th anniversary, KIPCO British Champions Day 2021, the nation's richest race day. October 16th at Ascot Racecourse. Be there for every second of it.
If you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Alan Cawley is with me live in studio. Al, how are you?
I'm good, Marie. How are you?
Thanks for coming in. You have a big announcement to make.
I'm not sure
if I was going to, if you knew I was going to ask you this, but you're going to be taken to the stage.
I am. I always wanted to headline a venue and sing a song, but I'm not going to be singing, Marie.
Can you sing? Can you sing?
I'm not bad.
All right.
In my head, I think I can sing. But ask other people, I've heard me.
The boar's head in the middle of
the
night.
They might have a different answer. They'll have a totally different answer. But I do fancy myself as a bit of a young Neil Diamond from time to time. There you go. That's the party.
So tell us about the big night.
So yeah, we have a night planned, Marie. For those that know, we obviously do a weekly podcast, Cawley's Call, and it's gone really well over the past couple of years. We did plan this around pre-COVID, and that was always the plan, to have maybe a live event with some good guests. But COVID put a stop to that. But thankfully, the second series has gone well, and we're taking it out on the road, and we are going to have a night in the Sugar Club on the 17th of November, Wednesday evening. Great guests lined up: Stephen O'Donnell, Tim Clancy, Rory Higgins, up and coming League of Ireland managers, and Kenny Cunningham for now. And we've other guests lined up that we're going to wait to announce.
No Shamrock Rovers representation.
I'm on a high here, Marie. Don't drag me back down and get me in trouble.
Now, while I have you here, I'm going to put you on the spot. Okay. Are you going to give some tickets to our listeners?
I will, absolutely, yeah. There will be tickets and comps for anyone that wants them. Yeah, get in touch, and we might even run a little competition.
Exactly. We will give away a prize some night closer to the time. Now, there is a lot going on. The URC Championship is on this evening. Ulster will be looking to continue their winning start when they welcome the Lions to Belfast, kicking off at 7:35, and that is live on RTE2. Tadhg Byrne returns for Munster, and Bundee Aki is back for Connacht in their Interpro game at Thomond Park tomorrow, and Leinster's Tadhg Furlong, Ronan Kelleher and Jack Conan are back for their game against the Scarlets at the RDS. And anyone that was listening to the show last night would have heard Bernard Jackman mention that the South African teams are going to be playing their home games in South Africa instead of Italy, as was muted for the last few weeks. The restrictions have been lifted in some places, and South Africa have been removed from the red list. So a lot of the teams now will be able to go over and play in South Africa, which is pretty good, I think, for the game, the fact that they will have that home advantage. It is a busy night as well in the League of Ireland, and I think all eyes will be on Rovers versus Rovers, which is Sligo Rovers against Shamrock Rovers. Adrian Eames is at Tala for that game, where Shamrock Rovers will be keen to bounce back after last week's loss in Dundalk.
Yeah, they will, Marie. It's not that they played poorly in Dundalk by any stretch of the imagination, but still they left there empty handed. Now it's about getting back in the saddle and getting back to winning ways for Shamrock Rovers. They are a shoo-in to retain the title, 9 points clear of St Pat's, who are in Derry tonight. But Stephen Bradley will want to see a side wrapping up the title as soon as possible. So they'll be targeting 3 points this evening to take into Monday's mouth-watering meeting with Bohemians, a pairing which is generally one where form counts for little. It is first against third, at Tallaght tonight. Sligo Rovers holding on to third, but their grip is less than vice-like. They've won just 2 of their last 13 in all competitions. They did win in Tallaght back in May thanks to a Romeo Park strike, but more recently Shamrock Rovers went to the Showgrounds and recorded what was a pretty comfortable 1-0 victory. The visitors are without Niall Moran and Greg Bulger through suspension. Graham Burke, meanwhile, is moving very close now to return to Stephen Bradley's plans. A fine evening for a match, Marie, which kicks off at 8 o'clock.
It is a fine evening indeed and should be an interesting one. Sligo Rovers, Al, they always do cause a bit of trouble for Shamrock Rovers.
Well, the last night up there to beat them, Marie, in Tallaght, I was at the game and they played really, really well. Repeated that performance would be absolutely brilliant from a Sligo Rovers point of view, but I do think they're up against it going up there tonight. They're not in great form. Back then they were riding high at the top of the table competing with Shamrock Rovers. They've obviously tailed off a lot, and you look at the gap now, I think it's 18 points, so it just goes to show in that intervening period how much Shamrock Rovers have kicked on, or maybe how much Sligo Rovers have tailed off. But it is a big game from the obviously Sligo Rovers from their own point of view. They're looking to consolidate that third position, Marie, and at the start of the year they would have been delighted just to get into Europe, so I think it's really important that they do finish the job off and get into Europe, finish third. But Derry City are breathing down their necks obviously, and they're on a brilliant run at the moment under Rory Higgins. They have a tough game tonight against St Pat's themselves, so you might see some change there in around that third or fourth place position. Bohemians themselves have a game against Dundalk, and they're still obviously hot on the heels of them as well, so it's interesting that part of the table. But I would agree with Adrian in terms of Shamrock Rovers being 9 points clear, the Irish shoe-in to win the league.
Yeah, you mentioned those other two, I suppose, big games, which are Derry City and St Pat's and Bowes against Dundalk. Look, one thing we know about recent Bowes-Dundalk games anyway is that they're quite entertaining.
Oh, they've been absolutely fantastic, yeah, and they only played there a couple of weeks ago and some unbelievable goals. To be fair to Dundalk, they were looking doomed only 3-4 weeks ago. It just goes to show, Marie, how tight it is down the bottom, and if you can put 2 or 3 back-to-back wins, all of a sudden it bumps you right up the table. And Dundalk themselves now, like, we're talking about Bohemians and maybe Derry catching Sligo Rovers. Dundalk themselves, with the current run that they're on, they're only 8 points behind third place, and if they were to carry on and win the next 6 games or something like that, who knows where it could lead them. That will be their aim. I think it's still a bit of a stretch for them in terms of Europe. I still think it's between Sligo, Derry and Bowes, but certainly, to be fair to Vinnie Purty, has turned things around over the last few weeks, and of course they have the semi-final of the Cup to look forward to next week.
And you mentioned down at the bottom of the table as well, and unfortunately for Longford Town, they can be relegated if they lose to Drogheda United and Finn Harps win in Waterford. So we are at that stage of the year now, Al.
Yeah, and they were tipped at the start of the year. It was always going to be a tough season for Longford coming up. They kind of kept the same budget as what they had in the First Division. It's a huge jump, Marie, to come up from the First Division and even just to compete. They've been tailed off completely for weeks now, and as you say, it might be made official tonight that they will get relegated, but it's only a matter of time before they do. They're playing against Drogheda. I can't see them getting a result. Finn Harps themselves have a tough game at Waterford. Waterford, who've been rejuvenated under Mark Burcham, but they still lie in that relegation playoff spot, and they're 4 points off Finn Harps, so it's a huge night for them, Marie. It's interesting for them because obviously they're in the semi-final of the Cup, but I think they have to focus solely on the game tonight and worry about the Cup. That'll take care of itself next week, but because they're 4 points off in Harps, they have to get a result tonight.
Now let's turn our attention, Al, to the women's game, because Vera Powell did announce a squad of 27. They have those crucial World Cup qualifier games coming up, the Sweden game on Thursday before travelling to Finland on Tuesday, and we will have live commentary of that Sweden game here on the show, and I'm really excited about that. And look, I'm pretty excited about the squad as well, and I think, Alan, mostly because, you know, you have the likes of Louise Quinn and Katie McKay playing so well in the top league of women's football in the Super League in England, and just even to have two players at that level and doing really well is such a good boost now heading into these games.
Absolutely, yeah. It seems to me, Marie, even looking in, I've often mentioned this in recent times, that the game is obviously developing at a rate of knots, which is fantastic. But certainly, you mentioned Katie McCabe there, and even just from a personal point of view with Katie, it's like as if she's gone to a different level as well. She's been absolutely phenomenal in recent weeks with the stuff going on with Arsenal. Maybe it's because there's a bit more exposure and we're seeing it because the games are on Sky now as well. But certainly from her own point of view, she's been absolutely fantastic. I think with Vera, I spoke to Vera a few weeks back on something separate from this, but we mentioned obviously with the qualifiers coming up, and it was before the Australia friendly, but she was really, really confident about their chances of obviously getting into the qualification campaign and doing well and qualifying for the major tournament for the first time. We would love to see it happen. They went so close obviously in the last campaign. I think the games that are coming up give them a good opportunity to get off to a good start, and not only I suppose the girls playing at such a high level, but I think the confidence they will gain from the friendly result against Australia as well. They played really, really well in Tala only a couple of weeks back, and I think they have to bring that form into the start of the qualification campaign.
It's funny you mention watching Katie McCabe and how important it is to for Sky to be shown those games, because you do get people not only seeing the women's players but also talking about them. And Ian Wright was talking about Katie McCabe only a couple of days ago, and he says that as a player she reminds him of Stuart Pearce, the way she just steamrolls into people, no shit, gets on with it, gets clattered and gets up again and gets on with it, which is just brilliant to have a legend like Ian Wright been able to recognise the quality of Katie McCabe.
Yeah, and that's the thing with the game, as I say, it's developing at such a speed, Marie, that they're becoming household names, and rightly so, and particularly at that level obviously, being so high with the games on Sky. But if, for anybody that follows Ian Wright on Instagram, he's always talking about the women's game, and he's always showing highlight reels if there's goals, some great goals scored or whatever the case may be. So he's always right behind it. Obviously he's a legendary figure at Arsenal, but it's brilliant for someone like him. And I'm sure Katie and the likes of the girls, if they see Ian Wright talking about stuff like that or complimenting her on qualities that she has, comparing her to the likes of Stuart Pearce, it doesn't get much better than that, Marie.
Absolutely,
to be fair,
it does not. And also, Al, you showed just, or you said just how much the game is coming on, and I think as well it's really significant when Eileen Gleeson, who has been a manager here in Ireland and with P-Mount and also assistant manager with Vera Powell, is now moving on to take over as the manager of Glasgow City. So to see her go into that role as well, it's a really significant move for her. Vera Powell actually spoke about her today. Let's hear what Vera had to say.
Eileen has been a major part of our programme. She took care of all the Irish based situation. I took more care of the players on the other parts of the world. But Eileen and I grew to a situation that we can read and write with each other. Against Australia, we only had to look at each other. She two words, I two words, we understood them and we took the decision. Now I need to grow again with somebody. But on the other hand, when she told me, I was so happy for her. There's nobody who deserves it more than Eileen. Her thinking on abstract level is phenomenal.
And Al, as Vera said there, like, she was the one that was the connection to the Irish game. And when you're looking through the Ireland squad of 27 players that was announced today, it's littered with players from the women's game here, like Savannah McCarthy. You can see as well there Amanda Budden is in there. Just loads of different clubs from Ireland, Saoirse Noonan, Shelburne, Eveen Clancy, Wexford Utes, of course, Anya Gorman is in there, Kira Grant. So what she's done is she's been able to get those players to a level by developing those home base sessions to something that become really important to Vera Powell's setup there as well. So it's going to be crucial to replace her with somebody who knows the women's game as well as she does.
I think that's the key to it, Marie. The last line, what you said there, replacing her with somebody that knows the game as well as what Eileen did, because obviously Eileen had all the success with P-Mount. She had her finger on the pulse in terms of what was going on domestically here. I remember when Vera took over initially, she spoke about the level that the girls were playing at domestically not being at the level to maybe compete at international level, and we need to raise it to a standard where it is. And I think over the course of the 2 years we've seen that, Marie. There's obviously still a bit to go, but if you look at the Women's National League game, the qualities of the games now at the weekend, obviously they're being shown, some of them televised with TG4, I think is brilliant as well. And Eileen must take huge credit, because during that time as well, we've had COVID, and as Vera said there, she was the one that took up the mantle and obviously to look after the home-based players, maybe training sessions, whatever it was, home-based sessions, whatever they were doing, but to get them to that level. And I think that's a reflection of the work that Eileen has been doing. There's so many girls representative in that international squad that's obviously going to play in the qualifiers now. And I think that's something that you're going to see more and more of, Marie, and I think it can only be good, because I only see the women's game going one way. Like, every conversation you have with people around football in this country, the women's game gets mentioned, and rightly so. It's in the conversation now, and it has to be in the conversation. And I think that's taken place all over the world, but certainly domestically here, from our own point of view, we're obviously only looking after what's on our doorstep. And I think it's really important for the girls, and rightly so. Good luck to them. I would love to see them qualify for a major tournament. I think that's all that's missing at the moment, and it would be phenomenal for the girls. And I don't think Vera would have came back. She's this really infectious character, and she loved her time here. They came so close in the last campaign. She had a decision to make whether to obviously come back and commit her next couple of years and sign a new contract with the belief that they would qualify for a tournament. I don't think she would have come back, Marie, unless she firmly believed that there's a squad capable of getting to a major tournament.
Yeah, well, hopefully those games will go well, and hopefully as well the FAI are working on identifying someone to replace Eileen, because it really is a crucial role, and you just have to take a look at the squad and the development of the players here at home to know the importance of that pathway, and for those young players as well to be able to see that they can get there. Now it is time to talk Gaelic games, and John Fogarty is with us on the line, or he will be very, very shortly. We're going to take a very quick break first, and then we're going to talk about Special Congress.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Fern's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Curl. I'm in studio with Alan Colley, and we are now going to turn our attention to Gaelic games, and particularly the money aspect of Gaelic games. John Fogarty from The Examiner is with us. John, look, I think everybody has been debating what format of championship they would like or not like, as it seems to be the case for a lot of people. We will find out next weekend what the future is going to look like. But what we did find out over the last 24 hours is what a league-based football championship would look like from a financial point of view, and the GAA feel that it would not be as lucrative as what has been there in the past, which seems to be a bit of a blow to what people were expecting.
It would be, Marie, in the sense that you would think, like we heard at the start of the week, Conor O'Donoghue, who was on the calendar fixtures review committee, he put forward the idea that the league's championship could reap another 10 million possibly. Now obviously that has been dismissed by the GAA financial department, and some people have described it as the death knell for the proposal. I don't think it is yet. Absolutely it's a blow, Marie, but it's not just based on money that you would hope that this decision will be made, as much as, listen, we're in COVID times. People are still very worried about how much money is coming through. The likes of Munster haven't been able to give development grants to clubs and their other units. So money is a major issue. So when you're hearing 10 million at the start of the week, you're thinking, brilliant, that's fantastic. And now we're hearing that, in fact, a league's championship, or the All-Ireland League, as I like to call it, it's just shorter and a little bit snappier.
I like
snappier.
That. I'm going to go with that too, John.
Yeah, it's just snappier, Marie. But anyway, that just seems, now that's going to make less money, or at least this is the opinion of the financial department. Now, we have the GPA coming out today, and I think with, you know, it is merited. They're saying that the GAA are on the conservative side here. You know, Conor O'Donoghue has argued that he has been on the conservative side in terms of his projections as well, but it has been a blow from a financial perspective, absolutely, for the All-Ireland League.
So John, what's quite interesting is a lot of people are interpreting the GAA Finance Committee throwing a bit of cold water on the initial figures that were being bandied around as them not being in favour of this B Championship, but is that just because we haven't heard them say what they think?
That's it, Marie. In the meeting last night, I'm led to believe that there was no favoured proposal at all from the financial department. They were just saying, listen, the figures at the start of the week were inflated. Here's why they're inflated. And of the three proposals, obviously there's only two, but there is a proposal, let's be honest. It's the qualifier system that we knew before the Super 8 start and the Tailteann Cup would come in. If the two other proposals don't reach the 60%, it's actually that which would bring in the most money, which is they project 19.6 million, as opposed to the four provincial conferences of eight teams that would bring in 19.3, and the All-Ireland League, they believe, would bring in 18.8. So some people have described this as negligible. It probably is, in a way, if you want to look at it in those relatively negligible. Anyway, but now the GPA have come out today and said, right, fair enough, we believe you're conservative there, but at least it shows that this isn't going to lose money for the GA. So what's there to fear about it from a financial point of view? In fact, you know, let's move on and let's do what the players want, do what the managers want, and let's do what a lot of supporters want, Maria. And I think everybody accepts at this stage there has to be change, but the argument now is the change on the table, is it good enough? It's 2 years on now. It has dated a little bit. It probably should be revised. The provincial championships, there's huge concern there now that they're just, they're just untenable, really, in their current format, in the knockout format. There has to be change, but if there is no change coming tomorrow week, I fear the backlash is going to be huge.
So, John, look, I think maybe as well a lot could hinge on what the GAA think, but are we going to hear from them at all?
Usually it is the standard, Marie, for a president not to prejudice a vote, I should say. You'd often find before Congress, the journalists are invited to an off-the-record briefing just to give us an idea of the motions and to understand them. Now, nothing is for attribution. There's no words that put about a person's name or anything like that. It's just the Director General, in this case Tom Ryan, used to be Padraig Duffy, they would give us an outline of, they wouldn't give an opinion. What people don't understand this time around is, why isn't Larry McCarthy talking about it? Why isn't Tom Ryan talking about it? Well, I can understand why Larry McCarthy isn't talking about it. As I said, the presidents don't want to prejudice it. I would have hoped that Tom Ryan would have shown some leaning on it, some bit of leadership. Obviously, Padraig Duffy, the Super 8 was his baby. He had to be front and centre for that. This isn't Tom Ryan's baby, so maybe that's his argument, that he doesn't have to be front and centre. At the same time, a lot of people are turning their lonely eyes to Croke Park in a way, Marie. There was a lot of disappointment and agitation among disappointment and even anger among treasurers that they're only getting the figures now when counties like Offaly and Westmeath have already made a decision to back Proposal B. Maybe they have to look back at it now and revise their decision, because these figures are only coming out now. And they're only coming out, obviously, because of the reporting. There's no statement or anything from the GAA, which is, again, a bit disappointing too.
Yeah, it just feels like, you know, often we have people out selling things. It just feels like that there isn't really anyone, maybe barred the GPA, who are putting forward for this Proposal B. So it's just really even hard to get a consensus of what's going to happen next Saturday. But in fairness to the GPA today as well, John, they were really clever with their response after those figures came out. And there was a lot of people pretty worried, actually, that it would, as you said, sink the Proposal B, but they said that they're delighted that the GAA confirmed there will be no meaningful financial impact should Proposal B be backed at Special Congress, with only a 4.1% difference between any eventuality, using the GAA surprising conservative attendance figures, which was probably a very clever way really to respond, I thought.
It was, Marie, because they don't want this to die. 80% of the respondents, of GPA members, of the respondents, people who have come back and given them the feedback from the panels, want the All-Ireland League, want the League's Championship. So they refuse to believe. They're being hugely proactive. I must give them that, because the GPA in the past have been so 11th hour and so reactive and so slow to things. At least this time around, they're being proactive. They're the most vocal about it. I would imagine you're going to see managers over the next while. You're going to see county secretaries. Obviously, the votes are going to be revealed over the next while, and that'll be interesting. But the GPA have been front and centre on this, and you have to admire them for that. Hopefully, we will get something from the GAA leadership next week. Now, obviously, they're not going to try and sway the vote, you imagine, but at least give an opinion, because so many people are crying out for it. On the basis of speaking to a GAA official off the record today, really, they fully believed that Proposal B, there was a huge, there was wind in the sails of it. They were estimating that it was 45-50% of support after this news about the not being as financially lucrative. as we were led to believe earlier in the week, they now believe it's dropped back to 25-30% support. So if that's the case, then, you know, it hasn't a chance. But things have changed. I've said this before. Everybody thought that was going to be beaten, Marie. There was huge support for that. Rule 42, everybody thought that was going to be beaten. And yet there was huge moves, huge lobbying made in the last 7 days. There's still 8 days to go. It's not dead. There was a huge setback for it last night, obviously, with that financial news. But it's not dead in the water yet.
Well, it's definitely very interesting anyway. One of the most interesting votes that I've experienced in quite a while. And John, just in terms of managers, we must be nearly coming to the end of the managerial merry-go-round now at this stage. Are there many more positions left to be filled? And can you see any of them being filled in the next couple of days?
I would imagine Down might be filled in the next couple of days. Marie, Galway, Hurling, obviously, I would imagine by the middle of next week we should know the successor for Shane O'Neill. Waterford Football probably might be a little while yet. Obviously the likes of Longford had their eyes on a couple of people, but had a little bit of a setback there. By the end of October, I would hope, at least I say the county boards will hope that everybody's in place, but I'd say a couple of high profile names will be getting appointments now in the next 5 to 7 days.
Right, Galway is the big one there.
It might be, yeah.
John Fogarty, thank you so much. We're going to take a very quick break and then we're back with the Premier League.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Get back on track after summer with Green Firm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now it is time to turn our attention to the Premier League. Alan Cawley is with me in studio and journalist Fergal Brennan joins us on the line. It's been an interesting international break. It feels like an awful lot has happened. And I guess, look, we can't really look much further than Newcastle and their game against Spurs with Steve Bruce still in charge. He's 1,000 game as Premier League manager. Alan Cawley, will it be his last?
I think it is pretty inevitable, Marie. I listened to his press conference today and I think he's obviously aware of that himself. He completely knows. But to be fair, all the journalists were suggesting that he wouldn't be in place for this match, and he is. So he came out with a bit of, I wouldn't say a backlash, but he was probably right to give them a little bit of a dig today. But I do think it's only prolonging the inevitable, because I just can't see, with the amount of money and funds that are obviously a play here for the club with the takeover, which I'm dead against, by the way, Marie. I just want to say that I'm absolutely dead against the takeover. I've no time for it whatsoever. I don't think it should have been allowed. I didn't think it would be allowed, but now that it is here, I suppose, just discussing the football side of things, I do think they'll bring in a more high profile manager, and I think his days are numbered. But don't have too much sympathy for Steve Bruce, even though I'm a great fan. I think the press conference that he had today, he mentioned the word dignified, and that's exactly, he's been so dignified throughout this. But I think that's him throughout his career, Marie. I have great time for him when he was a player. He's been such a solid professional. He obviously carried that into his managerial days as well. I think he's renowned all over the game as being a good fella, and nobody would have a word to say bad about him, really. And he has handled this really, really well. But the money that's been bandied about in terms of what his payoff is, have no sympathy for Steve Bruce.
He didn't look too sad now, I have to say, in his press conference today. I think it's going to be, the atmosphere is going to be phenomenal. They are playing Spurs on Sunday at 4:30, and he knows it as well. So he may as well just go along and soak it up. Let's hear what he had to say today.
Well, I know it'll be some ridiculous atmosphere, which we're all looking forward to. And like always, for me, is wherever they think of me, the most important thing for them is to see their team win a game. And I know they'll be right behind the team in an atmosphere which I doubt we've witnessed at St James's Park for a long, long time. So I'm hoping that the team, which have trained really well all week, been really, really focused on the job in hand, and I really hope we can go and perform and win the match.
Yeah, what's it been like preparing for this match on the training?
Well, I'm not going to lie, it's not been easy, but as I've said, I've been around the block a long, long time, and my job from day one was focus on the training session every day. How are you going to prepare the team? How to prepare me staff as well to cope with what's gone on? And as I said, the most important thing, the players have trained very, very well all week, which was good to see.
Fergal Brennan is with us as well. Fergal, I'm actually really interested to see how Harry Kane turns up against Newcastle, because he's going to know that they'll be the ones with the huge pockets. And sure, look, if Man City didn't take him in the last window, maybe Newcastle might take him.
There is the potential for that, and that's obviously where all the talk is at the moment with Newcastle. Everyone's kind of looking at this from the position of they might be a little bit more careful in January. They're in a position where they're not going to throw around a massive amount of money. January generally isn't a market where big records are broken or big transfer fees are paid out. But the nature of the buyout in terms of PIF and what they will look to inject into Newcastle is an absolute game changer. It seems so incredibly difficult to predict that the logical kind of hardened Premier League attitude is they'll throw some money around in January. We could see 3-4 new faces coming into Newcastle, which will hopefully drive them away from relegation, maybe push them onto the outskirts of a European spot. But then on the flip side of that, we're dealing with a situation which is the stat that keeps rolling around in my mind, that Newcastle are now richer than the other 19 clubs put together. So in theory and potentially even in practice, we're 2 months away from the window, they could put a wild bid in for a Harry Kane or a Kylian Mbappe or something like that. In my mind, I still can't see it happening, but just a sheer amount of money that will be available, and I agree with Alan completely, that it won't be Steve Bruce, the sheer amount of money that will be available to whoever is in charge at St James's Park mean that there's no reason why they can't bid for Harry Kane. Whether Harry Kane would be interested in that as an option is a completely different question. But there's nothing holding them back now in terms of finances and what will be available to whoever is in charge of Newcastle Football Club in 2022. The sky's the limit. That is how much money is potentially in the bank for them to spend.
It's actually frightening when you do lay it out like that. Klopp was asked about it today as well, and look, in fairness to him, he didn't hold back on his opinions.
I actually was waiting for some official statements about it, like from Richard Masters or somebody else. So, but because we all know there are obviously concerns about human rights issues, I think that's all clear, that we all think the same there. So didn't happen in the first place, happening then. Still, that's the situation. What will it mean for football? That's a few months ago, I think we had a massive argument issue, I would say, the whole football world with 12 clubs or so trying to build a Super League, and rightly so. Didn't happen, but creating a super team, if you want. It's pretty much the same. Guaranteed spots in the Champions League, not in a few years' time, not immediately, all these kind of things. With all the financial fair play is used nowadays, where nobody knows exactly is it still existing or not, stuff like this. So it's like it is. So everybody knows that. Newcastle fans will love it, of course. But for the rest of it, it just means there's a new superpower in Newcastle. I cannot avoid that. Money cannot buy everything, but can over time, that will take time, but over time they have enough money to make a few wrong decisions, to make then the right decisions, and then they will be where they want to be. So that's how it is. I don't think that's to avoid in the long term, but that's the situation. Everybody knows that. And obviously, the Premier League or Richard Masters thought, yeah, let's give it a go. I don't know it, but it's not the first time. It's just the third, as far as I know, the third club who is not owned by a country. So I'm not sure how many countries are still out there to have the financial power and the interest to do so. But this is how it is. And that's what everybody has to deal with.
Fergal, in fairness to him, he calls out Masters there, the head of the Premier League, Richard Masters, and he was looking for more leadership from him, as you would from the chief executive of the governing body almost.
Yeah, and Klopp has shown this consistently over his over his time at Liverpool, that he's not frightened or not daunted by calling on the Premier League or the FA or various other individuals in positions of power in terms of organisation of English or European football and basically asking them to do their job properly. That's exactly what's happened here. I covered his press conference and he did make a little bit of a joke at the start, hinting about this idea that he was the first manager that was in front of the press after the European Super League announcement and now this. And it is the truth. Like the other clubs, it is being framed as sour grapes from the perspective of Newcastle, that the other clubs are only unhappy because Newcastle are now another force, another face at the table. But the reality is the other 19 clubs have been kept in the dark about what was going on. But then conversely, the clubs that were not involved in the European Super League argument will also say that they were being kept in the dark. The reality is there is an awful lot of people that are not being included in these conversations when we talk about rules of ownership, fit and proper tests for owners taking over football clubs and massive investments. And Klopp, as I say, has never shied away from calling out and questioning, you know, where the line between ethics and football lies, because this is something, and again, I agree with what Alan said straight off the bat, I would be completely in objection to what is going on at Newcastle Football Club. And something does need to be done about it. But I do honestly think that the die has been cast in that sense. The Premier League have made their decision. They've also looked to kind of close the conversation in regards to why this tribunal that was penciled in for January was going to take place and has now been kind of knocked off the schedule. Klopp and other managers and other people involved in football clubs are going to keep asking these questions. But ultimately, I think the Premier League's decision has been made because they've seen the financial push that it will give them. If that damages other clubs or damages the competitive nature of certain competitions, then I don't really think they care. And they've demonstrated that consistently over the last 12 months.
It's gone too far. I agree with Fergal. It's gone too far in Omri, because this never should have happened and it should have never gone through, and they've backed themselves into a corner and there's no way out of it now for the Premier League. And I agree with Klopp. Klopp is absolutely brilliant on no matter what topic, no matter what's the subject, he always gets it bang Omri in the press conferences, and he's right to call out these people, because what's happened is a disgrace. And what he mentioned at his last line there in the press conference is, how many other countries are out there? When is this going to stop? Like, where do you draw the line here? And is it okay now for people to decide with buckets of money that they're just going to come in and take over football clubs? The game is going to be destroyed. It's all right. Like, we spoke numerous times, and the amount of times even you speak to people on the street or just general chats if you're having with football fans or football lovers about the obscene amount of money that's in football now. And everybody is so disgruntled with that. But Fergal's stat that they have more money than the 19 clubs put together, that is an extraordinary stat. It really is. I didn't even realise that myself now. And that puts football into a stratosphere that it's never been in. And it can only end in one way. And it's chaos now for me. It's absolute chaos.
Fergal, I was listening to an interview with a football journalist a little bit earlier today, and he made such a brilliant point. He was saying that his son, who was 13, came in and started talking to him about how much money Newcastle had and how much money Man City had and PSG, and just talking about all the money in the game. And he was making the point that when he was younger, he wasn't thinking about things like that. When he was 13, he was thinking about what he was seeing on the telly, about going to the games, about the goals, about the players, and just about his club that he loved. Whereas now, it's just the landscape has completely changed for the young kids coming up, for football fans, and it just really illustrated to me how the game has changed.
And not for the better, Marie.
No, absolutely not. Fergal?
No, and I think that, yeah, I agree, that's the changing landscape. And I think so many of these things just get brushed off in terms of, oh, that's the game now, oh, you can't change that, you can't do this, you can't do that. The reality is, at some point, there has to come a line in the sand where we say no. Like, there's certain things that can be brushed off and just kind of excused as an inevitability in terms of the financial dynamics of the Premier League, but the situation with regards to Newcastle is completely different. What is being condoned by the Premier League by allowing the Saudi Arabian state and PIF, who they are backing, this can be dressed up and repackaged however anyone wants to slice it up. The reality is this money is coming directly from a regime that there's huge amounts of questions that need to be asked about it. And I think, as you were saying, these conversations that are happening between parents and children or fans with each other or friends with each other, everyone is so quick to just brush it off of, oh, it's gone too far, we can't do anything anymore. But this genuinely feels like a completely different level that we've gone up to. We've all bit our tongue and let things go and just kind of looked to maybe move the conversation when we talk about money involved in football. This is different. This is human rights. This is a really, really worrying situation that the Premier League and huge amounts of people involved in the footballing community have turned a blind eye to. And that is a very, very, very scary prospect.
During the Super League stuff, Marie, and obviously we had so many conversations around it, and even in the space of that, I remember the news breaking one of the evenings over that weekend, I think it was the Saturday night, and by Monday or Tuesday, the backlash was so big and it was knocked on the head, and it was brilliant. And for the first time in years and years, I thought, this is the beautiful game the way it's supposed to be, and I'm so glad with everybody all over the backlash to this. What surprises me most about this is there doesn't seem to be a backlash at all, or there doesn't seem to be outcry. Well, certainly nowhere near close to what the outcry during that Super League stuff, but there doesn't seem to be much of an outcry at all towards this. Like, there's the few dissenting voices, but because, as Fergal mentioned there, the die is cast now and it's in, it's like, let's just get on with the football side of it. But this is, honestly, this is the ruination of the game for me. It's absolutely, that stat alone, it just sticks out so much. That stat is staggering.
Unfortunately, it is done now, and we are in a situation where we're going to be entering an era where, as Klopp says, we have another superpower in the game, and they're going to be pretty much guaranteed the top spots in the Premier League for the who knows how long. But we're also in a time as well where we're going to be starting to have conversations. Actually, they've already started about who Newcastle are going to buy, how much they're going to spend. And even a little bit earlier, Brendan Rodgers was asked about being linked to Newcastle, and this is what he had to say.
I've got a contract till 2025. I absolutely love being here. I'm very fortunate that we have an infrastructure here that allows us to look to compete. So for me, as long as they don't want to move me, then I'm very happy being here at the club. And like I say, I've seen all the reports around it, but of course it doesn't help anyone in particular. Newcastle and Steve, as you say, but like I say, it's unfortunately it's the type of week that I don't like in the modern game. You know, we all the managers, coaches, we all work hard to do the best for our teams, and then we have speculation and gossip that goes around. It can destabilize supporters and maybe players, but it doesn't benefit anyone at all.
That is the world we live in now, Fergal, where every second player is going to be asked. We're going to be looking at Mo Salah and his contract situation probably as well, and wondering, you know, is he going to be up for grabs, and who are they going to go after?
Yeah, I mean, it is going to be the dominant theme in press conferences, certainly for the next few weeks. Managers, now obviously there, Brendan Rodgers has essentially said no, he's committed to Leicester. There's talk of potentially long-term him looking at Manchester City, or Manchester City looking at him. And yeah, I do think that the next kind of line down on the bookies list of favourites of who could take over Steve Bruce, they'll now be asked about it, and so on and so forth, until a decision is made on who will inevitably replace Steve Bruce. And in terms of players, it is very, very difficult to gauge, because we look at Manchester City as a little bit of a framework to work off and measure against, and how they went through the processes. Obviously, the famous deadline day deal when they brought in Robinho and grabbing Dimitar Berbatov at Manchester Airport and trying to convince him to go to City instead of United. And then they obviously went through stages until Roberto Mancini came in and they started to really turn the screw and win major titles. We assume that that is how Newcastle are going to do things. But again, we go back to this staggering amount of money. The rule book's been thrown out the window. It's been torn up and thrown out the window because there is so much money on offer. I do think in the medium term, in terms of January, I think we'll see scouring of the Premier League, looking at the best players in the teams kind of around them, maybe a bit above them in the Premier League table, looking across into Europe, players who are big stars but maybe not getting a game, maybe wanting to leave their club, but their club are wanting to offload them. I think that's the market that they'll be going to in January, if I was to make a bit of a prediction. But it is so difficult because they will want to make a statement. Whether they bring in somebody huge, whether they bring in a £100 million signing in January or not, they'll want to at least make the bid. They'll want to at least to be seen to be making those offers. If it doesn't work, fine, they'll try again in the summer. But I think there'll be some wild bids made. Whether they're pulled off or not remains to be seen. But I do think they will spend money in January. I do think they will have to go through a little bit of a mercenary stage of some of the players that they're going to bring in. And then in the summer, I think they'll roll big and we could see some massive, massive signings.
Alan, I'd say you're safe enough now with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. They're not going to come after him, is it? Although you do have some really, really tough fixtures coming up, so he could be on the market in a little while.
Yeah, well, I would worry for him over the next 4 weeks, Marie. You look at the games that's coming up. You look at the last six games and obviously how much they've struggled, and the game against Everton before the break, they should have been beaten as well. So I would worry for them. They obviously got beat to Villa as well. But you look at the fixtures coming up, and starting with tomorrow, Leicester City, I think that's a really, really difficult fixture for them away from home as well. Varane is injured, Maguire's injured as well. So it'll be interesting to see who would appear at the back with Lindelof probably. But you look at the next four games, and just the league games alone, if you leave out Atalanta in the Champions League. But next week then it's Liverpool, then it's Spurs away, and then it's Man City. So I think those next four games, I don't think it's beyond a stretch to say they could define whether he'll still be the manager there for the long term, because I can't see it, Marie. I can't see them getting four wins. I can't even see them getting three wins, to be honest with you, against those teams. And if that's the case, after what we've seen for the first few weeks of the season, I think they need to bite the bullet now, because as I've said all along, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, definitely a very tough few weeks ahead for Manchester United. Raheem Sterling has indicated today, Fergal, that he would be happy enough to leave Manchester City. He says he wants to go abroad, though, it seems.
Yeah, I think this kind of comes down to the idea that he's played for the two current powerhouses in the Premier League, Liverpool. Obviously, he's not going to go back to Liverpool, and Manchester City, where he's been massively successful. I think a lot of this comes from the idea that at the back end of last season, he wasn't getting a massive amount of games. I think his performances for England at Euro 2020 kind of masked that, but that was more born out of Gareth Southgate being quite loyal to him and him still being a quality player. He looks at his situation, I suppose, and thinks, I've still got the ability for the next few years. He's only 26, and contracts at the moment, he's got about 18 months left to go on it. That doesn't really mean an awful lot in the grand scheme of things, in terms of the way contracts are negotiated and pre-contract deals can be thrashed out. I could potentially see this. I'm a fan of Sterling as a player. I think his development under Pep Guardiola, in terms of being so consistent, of knocking in goals and making runs in behind the defence, I think he could be adaptable to go and potentially play in Spain, maybe even Italy. It does seem to be that Spain is the likely move for him at the moment. And I think he's justified in the sense that he's frustrated he's not playing as much. They brought in Jack Grealish this summer. Ferran Torres has been really good. He's picked up an injury now and he's going to miss about a month of action. But I think he possibly looks at the situation and sees himself as the odd man out, and Guardiola can't really have too many arguments about that. If he's not able to guarantee him a bit more of a starting role and an attractive offer comes in, he's got time on his side to go and test himself in another league and prove the player that he is, because we saw in the summer with England that he is a fantastic player when a manager shows faith in him and he's playing regularly.
Just before we finish up, will we see Queevy and Kelleher between the posts tomorrow against Watford?
Yeah, 100%. Klopp, as close to 100%, said it in his press conference today. Obviously, the situation with Alisson and Fabinho, they're not going to be available. So, yeah, Kelleher will be in goal tomorrow, obviously building on the Qatar win in midweek. And I think Liverpool fans and Klopp himself, they're huge fans of him. They're absolute faith in him that he'll be absolutely fine. And he's proven that he can cut it in the Premier League and the Champions League when he's been given a chance. And I think tomorrow he'll just slot in and he'll do a good job, because he's an outstanding goalkeeper.
Fantastic. Fergal Brennan, thank you so much for joining us. Alan Colley, stay with me because Jane Mankin is on the line and we're going to be chatting racing after this quick break.
Dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.
It's almost 7 o'clock on 2FM with My Expressway. Free travel card holders can now reserve their seat online at expressway.ie.
Game on 2FM.
Now, my favourite part of the show, it's a chat with Jane Mangan, who is going to educate me on all things racing. Jane, we have to start with the British Champions Day at Ascot. You tell me, it is the single biggest day of flat racing on the GB calendar.
I do, because I suppose we have plenty of festivals, Marie, but very little in terms of concentrated quality, and that's what we have. We have multiple Group 1s. We have Britain's richest race, the Champions Stakes. And fortunately for us, we have 13 Irish contenders trying to wrestle home from Stirling to this side of the Irish Sea.
Oh, we definitely like that. So what are the horses that could most likely do that then?
Yeah, well, I suppose this season, in particular on the flat, Snowfall has been somewhat of an ATM machine for racing fans. She started off her year back in the Musidora, won two Oaks at Epsom and at York, and she won. She ran a very good race in the Ark last time. Now, the concern is that was only 13 days ago, but in the Kipco British Champions Fillies and Mare Stakes tomorrow, she looks bankable material. On ratings, she's £10 clear of everything else. And then when you consider she's getting £6 from her elders, she's very, very difficult to oppose. Fan favourite Princess Zoe goes in search of another group success in the Long Distance Cup. She has to overcome Stradivarius and Trushan. But she, she is joined by Baron Samedi and Master of Reality from the Irish perspective. Joe Murphy sends over Gustavus Weston for the sprint, but Rohan will be very difficult to beat. Joseph O'Brien also has Thunder Moon in that. And that builds us up to the two pinnacles of the day, the Champions Stakes and the QE2. Palace Pier and Baib look like the match in the QE2, but don't forget Mother Earth. She's a classic winning filly, and she's something like 20-1 in the market. For somebody looking for each-way odds, I think Mother Earth is completely overpriced in the QE2. And in the Champions Stakes, Mishrif and Adair are the two big names. But Jim Bulger has Max Winnie in there. He needs to recapture his form. Remember, it's been a while since he won the Irish Guineas at the Curragh at the start of the season. He just seems to love the mud, and I'm not convinced he's going to get that tomorrow. Aidan O'Brien is Bolshoi Ballet in there. But Palace Pier, or excuse me, Mishrif and Adair are the main two in that. And I'd love to see Adair back after running a huge race in the Arc, but it looks like this has been a well-timed plan by John Gosden for Mishrif.
Well, you're speaking a lot of our language. I like it. Stealing Sterling, ATM machines.
Bankable.
All the buzzwords, Jane, yeah. So what about...
I love how your mind works, guys. I was just listening to your Saudi radio talk about soccer, and that just got me in that train of thought.
It might be good in horse racing, the Saudi Arabian thing, but it's certainly not good in football, Jane.
Oh, yeah. We've no problem with him in the horse racing, do we not, Alan? Jane, Oisin Murphy, is he going to get that third consecutive Jockeys Championship, or can William Buick upset the odds?
Yeah, you know what, Marie? It looks like it's well within his grasp now. He rode a double today. William rode one. So that puts him three winners in front with one day's racing to go. He's basically got one hand on the trophy. And bar William comes out with a treble at Champions Day and Oisin draws a blank, he'll be sharing the title. But it does look like going into the final day of the season that Oisin Murphy is going to secure his third championship.
Right, and what about Davy Russell and Gordon Elliott heading stateside?
Yes, they're off to New York. Of course, Gordon won the American Grand National 2 years ago with Jury Duty. And I suppose Davy, fresh back from injury, he's going out there with a major chance on Chosen Mate. The American Grand National is usually a big field, but there's only four runners in it this year. The home side is led by the Mean Queen, who... a filly trained in America but is an Irish-bred filly and is ridden by Richard Condon, who comes from my part of the world down here in Cork. So very much an Irish flavour in the feature race at Far Hills, New York tomorrow. But Chosen Mate, a former Cheltenham Festival winner, former favourite for a Galway hurdle, I think will take an awful lot of beating for Davy and Gordon in the American Grand National.
Well, Jane Mangan, thank you so much for all that. And if anybody is missing their Jane Mangan fix, you can catch her tomorrow in Leopardstown. That is all we have time for. Alan Colley, thank you so much for coming in. And you might come back in to me on Monday. We can look back on all of the weekend's action. Ruby will be back with us as well. Stephen Kelly will chat Premier League too. And we'll have Stephen Ferris on rugby.